Okay. We're back. It's been a minute since we've done one of these, but who knows? I don't even know really, you know, I gotta say, I don't think that the People Pleaser era is over yet. We are coming up on the 5-year anniversary of me doing People Pleaser in November of 2024. It'll be 5 years that I've been doing this show. I don't think I'm ready to like hang it up just quite yet. There are still people that listen to this show every time I put out an episode. But it's been harder and harder. I don't know if you've noticed, for me to keep up a weekly schedule on this thing. So I kind of think that this might just be a show that I do whenever I can, whenever I have something to talk about, whenever I have a guest that I want to talk to about something, and whenever I have the available time. One of the things that's been making it hard for me to record new episodes of People Pleaser lately is that I've been recording episodes for a new podcast that I'm doing with my friend Kramer England called The Oneer, and it's a film podcast where we break down films that we like. So we're kind of doing a mixture of movies that we grew up with and movies that kind of shaped us and movies that are current. And, you know, we do live in an era in Hollywood where everything is sort of a legacy sequel, and every movie that comes out is tied to some movie that was popular when we were kids. So it's not that hard to kind of tie in movies that are coming out now with movies that we grew up with, because many of them are just movies that are based on that IP anyway. You know, so a lot of our early episodes are like, we do Prometheus and we kind of just talk about the entire Alien franchise because we grew up with the Alien franchise. We talk about the movie Twisters, but we also review the movie Twister because that was a big deal when we were kids in the 90s. And it's been fun. It's been a good time. Kramer and I, as you'll hear on this episode, he's the guest on the episode. You'll hear that we grew up together. We were next door neighbors. We've been best friends since we were 4 years old. So there's a lot of history there. And the two of us have been really, really deeply passionate about film since we were little kids. And so it's kind of fun to have grown up with this person, and to the fact that both of us kind of stayed committed to this thing that we talked about wanting to do as kids. I don't think it turned out the way that either one of us dreamed it would when we were young, but we're still doing it. We're still committed to the dream. We're still committed to the passion. And this podcast is another step in that. You know, we may not be the world-renowned filmmakers we thought we would be at this point in our lives when we were next-door neighbors growing up, but we are still doing it. Kramer's a professional editor and a videographer, and I'm an actor, as you know, and I direct and write some as well. And we got this podcast where we can talk to each other about movies and about the things that we like about movies, and what works for us and doesn't work for us in movies. And that's exciting. Speaking of movies, it might be another couple weeks before you hear from me here on People Pleaser, because I am leaving tomorrow to go to Venice. I'm going to the Venice Film Festival to watch the premiere of Horizon Chapter 2. If you have not watched Horizon Chapter 1 yet, it's available right now on Max. If you got Max, it's streaming, baby. We were the number one movie on Max all last week, and I think we've only been bumped down to number two. We're still holding strong at number two. But go watch Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1 on Max so that you can be ready for the theatrical release, the incoming theatrical release of Horizon and American Saga Chapter 2. I don't know when that theatrical release will happen, but I do believe it's going to happen. And I'm going to Venice, Italy, to go see the world premiere of that film. I'm very excited about that. And I'm going to see some other movies and eat some really good food. And it's going to be a good time, I'm sure. In the meantime, while you're thinking, where did my People Pleaser go? Where did my regular People Pleaser podcast go? We're going to be uploading weekly episodes of the Oneer podcast. You'll hear us talking in this interview. I'm going to be saying a lot about like, oh, this should come out tomorrow. It's already out. I'm releasing this audio version of this podcast several days after we recorded it. This audio version has been up on YouTube for a while, but the first episode of the Oneer podcast has has debuted. It is on YouTube. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Podcasts. You can go subscribe to the Wonder Podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, and on YouTube. We would love it if you would do that. Go support us. Go follow us on Instagram, The Wonder Podcast, at The Wonder Podcast. It's spelled O-N-E-R. We did, you know, we went back and forth about this name, and we did think that we might have an O'Neaters situation on our hands. You know, the movie, That Thing You Do, how the band is called The Wonders, and they spell their name O-N-E-D-E-R-S, and people keep calling them The O'Neaters. We thought, like, does it look like The Owner Podcast? But it's The Wonder, O-N-E-R. The Wonder Podcast, and on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, I think it's just called The Wonder with Austin and Kramer. So Kramer spelled with a C, C-R-A-M-E-R. And anyway, go check us out. Go follow us. It's a good time. It's a good hang between two friends. And this is a nice little preview of what the show is like here in this episode. So I'm not gonna dress it up too much. This is me talking to my lifelong friend, Kramer England, about our new podcast, The Wonder. Now, here we are. Oh my gosh. From a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, it's People Pleaser. I haven't done an episode in weeks. I don't even know when the last time I did an episode was. I've been too busy doing kind of backlogging episodes for this new podcast I'm doing with Kramer England, who's here. What's up, Kramer?
How are you?
I'm good. I got my University of Utah.
I also wore red for the U. T-shirt on.
You know, got to rep the Utes. It's the beginning of college football. I'm excited. I'm ready. It's my favorite reality TV show. Football.
It's a great one. It's much better than all the other ones.
It's like season 130 or something.
I think it's more than that, but I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
Who knows?
But I really like this show, and I get excited for it every year. I did a little season recap today. I was so excited of last season.
Nice.
And I watched different games, and
nice.
Had to get excited for the return of Cameron Rising, who you know, they were playing Southern Utah, so he kind of looked like an NFL quarterback playing a scrimmage against high school kids.
That's how he should look.
Yeah. And it was his first game in like 600 games, they said. So it was like, it was like 600 days, not 600 games.
I was like, that's a lot of games.
That's a lot of games. That's like
all of college football for a while. Yeah.
No, 600 days. It was like 606 days or something. It was his first time playing. And he came in, he threw his career high for touchdowns in a single game. He threw 5 touchdowns in one half.
Game's not even over.
In one half, he threw 5 touchdown passes, and that's the most touchdown passes he's ever thrown in a game.
Okay, good.
So the guy looks good.
Yeah, that's what it should be. What it should be.
And Brant Keithy, who hadn't played in a long time, had 3 touchdown catches. It's good.
Awesome. You know,
two big injuries on defense, which you don't want to see that. But that's football.
That is.
What were you gonna
say? I was going to. I should probably still do it. But my stuff back here, I was going to put my. We went to one when I worked for the University of Utah. I worked for the football team, so I traveled with him. Brant Keithy was actually on the team my last year there. I think
he's been there forever.
He's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
There still might be one or two players, but I have a little nameplate that says Kramer England. It's got the U on it. I need to put it up there so that you can see it, but I don't know. I got to put that in there.
Heck yeah, you do. College football is back but that's not what we're talking about today.
No.
We have a new podcast that we've been working on. We've logged 5 episodes so far. We haven't released any. I believe I'm going to release the first one tomorrow on YouTube. It'll first be living here on my YouTube channel. If you're watching this podcast right now on my YouTube channel, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, it's going to be on my YouTube channel, Austin Archer, which you should be subscribed to if you're not already. If you listen to this podcast every week and you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, I don't know what the deal is, but that's where this podcast is going to be living initially. We're going to just have it live there for a minute, and then we'll probably get it its own YouTube page eventually. But our podcast is called The Wonder. yep. with Austin and Kramer. What is a one-er? It occurs to me that not everyone, it might seem really intuitive, but not everyone may know what a one-er is.
Yeah, it's intuitive if you know film, if you like film. I guess it's not really like a slang term, but a one-er is one long continuous take in a movie. You know, a lot of movies will have, you know, minute-long takes that kind of have a lot of blocking and a lot of choreography that go into it. And they're generally just kind of like, a lot of times they're kind of to show off. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're to heighten it, you know, the tension and something, or most of the time it just seems like they're to show off, but they're really, really fun to watch. And it's amazing to see how they all come together. There's some really famous ones. Let's see. What do you think is probably the most famous?
Oh, geez, there's so many. There's a really good one in Kill Bill Volume 1 when she's walking through the restaurant when she first arrives. There's a really famous one in Goodfellas, Martin Scorsese. When they arrive at the restaurant.
Or whatever.
Movies really like doing one-ers at restaurants. And I actually do think this is a thing, because you can sort of move through the kitchen space and you can go from like confined, claustrophobic spaces with lots of people crossing to open spaces with lots of background, and you have an entertainer on stage singing a song, and you can do, you know, kind of accomplish a lot in a very theatrical way.
Yeah, you can get a lot of depth. You can move it, you know, like,
And then, of course, there are like feature length long one-ers like Birdman or 1917, which aren't actually true one-ers, but are stitched together digitally to make it appear that way.
A lot of long takes, a lot of one-ers, but they're stitched together to make it look like one. Rope, I don't know if this was the actual first one, but Rope, an Alfred Hitchcock movie, he made it look like one continuous take. And I just read, I think he actually only had 11 shots in it, so.
I don't think I've ever seen Rope.
I've never seen Rope. It was on Amazon, and I wanted to watch it, but I never did. And I want to watch it because of that. There's actually, you know, I don't know if anyone could really say that they invented the one-er, because really back in the day, all, you know, film was one-ers. You just film until the film ran out.
Especially before sound. I really like in the movie, I didn't really care for this film, but I liked this part in the movie, Babylon. I thought the movie was fine. But I really like the sequence when they're showing the silent film era and what it was like to have all these different projects shooting on the same kind of plot of land. And because there was no sound, it was just chaos. It was just people screaming and yelling. And there are all these different little sets that are built. And they basically roll the camera and everybody just gets to work. And it's just like, it's like theater. Like people are just acting out an entire scene, and the people who you need to be focusing on need to be moving really big and emphatically so that the audience's eye is drawn to them. But everything is very wide and kind of just done in these continuous shots where they would cut away to do the little dialogue card of like, oh, look, our damsel is now, you know, being beset by the evil villain. Yes. And then the villain's like, I'll get you. But, you know, like they would just shoot this stuff until they ran out of film. They would just roll and roll and roll. And, you know.
Yeah. So I don't know if you can say anyone really invented the one-er. It's been around probably, since film. But I feel like Orson Welles might be the one who really kind of popularized it. He did one in like the 30s, like I think in 1939. I just read he did, let me look at this. It's called The Stranger. Sorry, in 1946, it was over 4 minutes. The reason he did that was so that his editor wouldn't change the shot that he wanted. So back in in the old days of Hollywood, the director and the editor didn't really work together. The editor would just get the stuff and then he'd put it together. So I think also John Ford did a lot of this. He wouldn't do certain shots so that the editor wouldn't switch to that shot.
Right.
So Orson Welles said, okay, well, I'll just do a really long take. So he did this. And then his most famous one, at least, I mean, I guess you could say it's different, but in Touch of Evil, the opening scene, first of all, the opening scene of that movie is probably one of the coolest opening scenes I've ever seen still. Mm-hmm. You see a guy walking up. There's like kind of, it's nighttime in Mexico and there's a lot of people going around. A guy goes up to a car and turns a knob and you see he's got a bomb, mm-hmm. puts it in the back seat of a car, and then you see the car drive through the city while all these people are walking around and kind of having a party. And it's one long continuous take. And it's amazing because you're wondering, when's the bomb going to go off? You know,
oh,
it's a great shot. It's a great shot.
I think you've worked with me before as a cinematographer and an editor for things that I've directed. And you know that I'm the same. I really like a long shot. I really like a wide shot, and I really like a long shot. And there are times where we'll shoot something where I'll be like, I'm just going to let you know right now that I'm probably going to want it just to be that in the edit. But we'll get coverage anyway, because it's just safe. It's just nice to have it. But I feel the exact same way where I'm like, if we get coverage, then we're going to use it. Yeah. And I just want to really encourage that we just stay on the one thing as long as possible. But then what's funny is a lot of times I'll really feel that way while shooting. And then when I actually see an edit that utilizes the coverage, I'll be like, okay, that's kind of nice. I don't mind cutting away to that a few times, you know, but like I am a sucker for unbroken takes.
It really shows. Again, like we said, it's kind of like showing off, but it's not just to show off. I mean, mm-hmm. You would know this way better than I would, but as an actor, it's great to, it is a little bit more theater-ish.
Right.
Right? Like everybody has to do their part. Everybody has to do a lot of work. And then the actors have to continually act, so they have to really prepare for it. So mm-hmm. I feel like as an actor, again, you tell me this, but like it's a little bit of a different experience. You really have to prep for it. And it's got to be pretty fun to kind of have the one take instead of, you know, having to do it over and over and over again. But
I don't know. There's something. Yeah. That's one of the things that I love about live storytelling. And that's something that I love about seeing concerts or any kind of live event is like, if you've ever played in a band in front of an audience or played live music or anything like that, you understand how difficult it is to play a flawless set, to actually go through an entire set of music and have no mistakes and have the entire band be in sync. Now, some of these bands that people go and see, or these musical acts that people go see, they play together. They've been playing together for so many years that it's like, mm-hmm. you know, the muscle memory is just so tight. But it's like an athletic feat. It's magical to actually sit and watch them go through the entire set of music, whether it's an hour or an hour, hour and a half, or sometimes 2 hours long of music, and do it flawlessly, for everyone to perform flawlessly, for every single musician on stage to hit all their entrances, for the backup dancers, if they have backup dancers, or the lighting technicians, the pyrotechnicians, for everything to work well. It's kind of amazing. And I think the same feeling happens when you're watching a one-er on film. It does something to the viewer. Because, partially I think you could say it's to show off. But I also think that there's something about it makes the audience sit up and lean forward and go, I don't think that the camera has broken yet. So some of my favorite – Alfonso Cuarón is one of my favorites at this, because he'll do films that – where the movie has cuts in it. But then he'll use these really, really long takes. Like, you know, you're watching the movie Children of Men, and it's just going along and you're enjoying the film. And all of a sudden there's this scene where they're in the car and they're like they're having this conversation, and they're doing this little trick with a ping pong ball, and they're spitting the ball back and forth to each other. And you're starting to notice, like, I don't really think the camera's cutting here. The camera's just sort of floating back and forth between Julianne Moore and Clive Owen, and you start, as an audience member watching it makes you sort of pay attention, because you're like, the way that he's shooting this is really unique, because normally the camera would just be cutting back and forth between each character, but he's just kind of turning the head of the camera on a swivel between the two of them, and it makes you pay attention mm-hmm. more. And then all of the sudden that scene gets violently interrupted by this gang of revolutionaries attacks their car, and they wind up having to hit the car in reverse, and they're getting shot at, and guys on motorcycles are trying to get inside the car. I think that they're aware that they have a pregnant woman in the car and they're trying to get her.
Yeah.
And but it's like, it all takes place in one take, and as you're watching it unfold, you're going, and it gets crazier and crazier. Julianne Moore, I think, spoiler alert, gets shot in that sequence, and she's like holding her neck, and they're holding her neck, and there's blood. I mean, it's like, it's breathtaking. And that's not the craziest one-er in that movie.
No.
But he has the movie Gravity. He also directed Gravity. And that movie starts, and it makes you feel like you're instantly in outer space, because the camera is just, it's the space shuttle that's working on a satellite is about the size of your thumbnail on the screen. And then it, the camera goes all the way in till it's in a close up on Sandra Bullock. And like,
yeah,
it goes from that, that scope. And then it doesn't cut until like the end of the first action sequence. And immediately you feel like you are there. It takes, it's taking place in real time.
Yes.
There's something really magical about it. Now, in Gravity, he is using some digital effects, obviously. They're not really in outer space, and they're shooting in a soundstage. But, like,
right,
the effect of the Oneer, I think, is you're, it, it just kind of presents this, like, yeah, how are they doing this kind of thing.
And it really, I think you you bring up a great point, because that happens to me all the time when I see a Oneer, especially in Gravity. When I saw it for the first time, I thought, okay, I don't think it's, I don't think the camera has cut yet. And it really did make me just all of a sudden pay attention more and just see, like, okay, all this is happening. And it makes you really kind of focus in on what's going on and why is there no cut? Like, and it's all still going. So it really kind of heightens whatever feeling you're going for.
A lot of times in Cuarón's films, it feels like he doesn't cut unless there's something interrupting the immediate action.
Right.
Like, unless there's like a jump in time or the end of a sequence. Like, he's like, hey, if the sequence isn't over, if the scene's not over, then we're not, then the camera doesn't cut.
Right.
You know? And in that sense, the camera feels, someone explained it about the movie Roma that he directed, mm-hmm, which I think is a brilliant movie as well. Someone said that the camera feels like the eye of God, and it just feels like, it doesn't feel like there's a camera crew present. It doesn't feel like in that car in Children of Men, it doesn't feel possible that there could be a sound technician and several key grips and a camera op. And it just, it doesn't feel possible. There's, there doesn't feel room in the world for Video Village or for the crew or for a process trailer or for anything like that. It just feels like whatever the camera is us. And we are just in that car experiencing that action, right, with the characters. And that's so magic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think magic, I think, is the key word. I think we both have loved Oneers. They're fun and they're magic. And I think that kind of, I think that's kind of why we ultimately decided on this name, because it took us a long time to figure out a name.
Yeah.
We had a few that we spent a couple of weeks trying to figure it out. So if you actually listen to the first episode that we actually recorded is The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear us talk about how we didn't know what we were going to name it, but we came to the Oneer, and I think it's really magical. And it's something that really makes you focus and thinking. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why we love movies. I mean, there's a ton, but you know, that's kind of, I think, why we settled on it, because it kind of encompasses how we feel. It's a, you know, movies are magic. They give you something that you can't really get, you know, it's escapism, but it's something that, you know, heightens your reality. It makes you hyper-focused. It makes you engage with whatever you're watching. And that's kind of ultimately why we chose it, I think.
Well, and then also in a cheeky little way, like a lot of podcasts, not all, but a lot of podcasts are Oneers.
Exactly.
And it's one of the things I like about the form of doing podcast. I've been doing this podcast, People Pleaser, for about 5 years now.
Wow.
I started it in November of 2019. So we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of doing this podcast. But one of the things I like about it is everything else that I create content wise on the internet is edit heavy. So it's like when I'm writing, I'm thinking about the edit. When I'm shooting, I'm thinking about the edit. Everything that I do has a lot of edits in it, even direct address things where I'm like, I'm just talking about a political issue or something directly into the camera. There's a lot of editing.
Yes.
And I'm writing a script and everything like that. One thing I like about making podcasts the way that I do it, not everyone does it this way. There are podcasts that are edit heavy, but I like that it's just sort of stream of consciousness, unedited. We hit record and it goes till we're done.
Yeah.
And it is itself a Oneer. There's something exciting about the live element of it that, like, when we hit record, we're going, and there's no second takes, there's no third takes. It's we live whatever we wound up saying on that episode. We've done 5 episodes of the Oneer so far, and I think outside of The Matrix, none of them are going to feature too much editing at all.
No, of the ones that I've edited, I haven't made any cuts besides The Matrix, because we were We were really figuring it out.
Yeah.
I think we were like 2.5 hours. So we wanted to make it a little shorter.
It's too long. But I think we cut it in a way that you don't notice the cuts as much.
No.
But it's, yeah. But still, it's like the podcast for the most part is a Wonder. That's sort of the concept of the Wonder podcast is we're talking about movies and we're doing it all more or less in one take. You know, the other thing that when you texted me and said, hey, should we do a podcast about movies? Right. I kind of sat there and I thought, now this is crazy because I don't think anyone's ever thought of doing, I don't think that there's ever been a podcast with two white guys talking about movies before. Exactly. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, you're totally right.
People in the chat can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I don't think that there's ever been a show on the internet where two white guys talk about movies. So I just thought that's crazy that it's 2024 and no one's thought of that.
Yeah. You're lucky you got a friend like me. So
I know. Yeah. And so like, I can't believe that no one has beaten us to this.
Exactly. You think someone would.
Yeah. No, but you know, the thing about like, I thought this when I started People Pleaser 5 years ago, I was like, look, even then I was like, what is my podcast going to be that's going to make it unique? And it's like nothing. It's just me. So the only thing, like the only reason to listen to the Wonder or watch the Wonder versus some other movie podcast is like, if you dig our analysis, if you like the way that we break down movies, then you might dig our show.
Yeah. That's what I want to do as well. I like talking about movies with you and, I like talking about movies. So hopefully people like listening to us talking about movies. So we'll try to keep it as, you know, us as possible. So,
speaking of us, we grew up next door to each other. We've known each other. Before we were next door neighbors, we were friends when we were about 4 years old. We went to preschool together at a place called Rainbow Connection.
Yes, Rainbow Connection. It was awesome.
What a cool it's
right
name
off
for
the
a
freeway.
Preschool. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the only things I remember about Rainbow Connection is like getting in someone's van one day and going and getting soft tacos from Taco Bell. And I don't know what that was. That's just like the memory that I have.
Yeah, you know, I have a few memories, like glimpses. I remember you and I think we went in the backyard and they had like a swing and you'd face each other. It was, you know, like, and you and I got on it and we would like swing back and forth. And then I remember being in the basement and like, I think we were all in a circle and I remember sitting next to you and that just weird flashes, but I do remember like little pieces of it. So a long time ago though.
See, and I can't tell if I remember it or if I can just like see what you look like in photos that I have. Cause I can see what you look like in my mind's eye. If like the photos and videos that I've seen of us at that age, but I don't know if I remember like what I remember is getting in that van and going and getting
tacos.
Taco Bell soft tacos. and someone threw up in the car. I know that one of these kids, that's going to happen. Oh, you're going to get a bunch of 4-year-olds in a van and go get them tacos.
Someone's going to throw up.
One of them's puking. Yeah. But I do remember playing at your house on top of the mountain,
top of the world. Yeah,
that was the street name, top of the world.
Yes. Top of the world drive. Yeah,
and then we moved into our next door neighbor houses on Cobble Canyon Lane when we were 5 or 6.
I think we
going
were
into
six.
First grade.
Yeah,
going into first grade, and we did all of school together, all of mm-hmm. the whole darn way.
Yeah.
But yeah, growing up, we kind of always were like this, right?
Yeah, like we were. Yeah. I mean, we were always talking about movies, and then you know, I'd come over to your house a lot of times. You, first of all, you had a great selection of toys, which was always
so
really
did you.
Fun. I guess we both did, right? I loved your G.I. Joes. You had so many G.I. Joes. Yeah. I had a lot of Ninja Turtles and Batman and. You know, all that. But we would either play big guys or little guys.
Mm-hmm.
And big guys were you and I just pretending like we were fighting or whatever. Right. And then little guys, we'd play with the toys. Mm-hmm. And so it was basically like we'd go to school, get home, I'd come over to your house or you'd come over to mine and be like, all right, big guys or little guys. And then we'd decide, and then that's what we do. We just play all the time.
Which was a pitch name for this podcast, Big Guys or Little Guys.
Yep, which I loved, but it probably wouldn't have the same meaning for anyone else.
Just might have been a little bit like, what? What's it called?
What are you talking? Big guys, little guys? Yeah.
Big guys or little guys? You know?
Yeah.
We were like, or like big guys slash little, like big guys, little guys. I don't know. But I think the oneer is a good place to land. But yeah, big guys or little guys was a big, that was an important question. It was like a daily part of my childhood was figuring out with Kramer if we were going to do big guys or little guys. It's weird to think now, like, I wonder if our parents ever coordinated on which toys they got us because we did not have a lot of doubles. Like
no,
you had things, that I didn't have, and I had things that you didn't have, but they were in the same world, so they complemented each other.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there was ever any coordination where my mom would check in and be like, hey, Kim, I'm getting Austin this. Does Kramer already have that? You know,
maybe they did, because now that you say that, that is very, very true.
Yeah.
We had very, very little overlap.
Yeah.
So,
but we were very lucky. We had a healthy assortment of little guys to choose from to kind of cast. Because here's the thing is we were making movies. When we would get together and play, and I know that all kids do this. That's what I love about movie making and acting is it's just playing pretend.
Yep.
But like, I think we very much intentionally saw it in our heads as a movie.
Oh yeah.
So we would sit down and we would sort of like storyboard out the beats of the script before we even started. We'd be like, okay, well, we'd cast the movie. We'd take all the toys and we'd be like, this is my character. This is the main guy. This is his friend. And then you'd be like, this is me. We'd give them backstories. We would, you know,
these guys come in and they steal our girlfriends, you know, whatever it was that we would say.
That was the plot of every movie.
I think it was the plot, you know, our girlfriends got captured because we're young and we have girlfriends. And
The plot was always like we were like retired special forces or retired cops and our girlfriends always got stolen.
So dumb. But that's every time it was. And I mean, we really liked action movies, you know?
Yeah.
Very much love those, which I still love. But that seemed to be the thing that we would see.
We liked Jean-Claude Van Damme and Sylvester Stallone and
Schwarzenegger.
And we liked Mortal Kombat and we liked, you know, and so
Whenever we played big guys, this was kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember whenever we played big guys, we would turn on the Mortal Kombat song and we would fight air guys, you know, and just like run around your basement and like jump over the couch and like, oh, you know, and that song would just get us so pumped up.
It's one of the greatest action movie songs of all time.
I love it. You know, they go, Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, like not enough. Here's the problem with modern cinema, with modern Hollywood, is not enough movies have a techno song that screams the name of the movie during the movie. And more movies need to have that. Okay, I think Deadpool and Wolverine should have had a techno song that went Deadpool and Wolverine.
That would be great.
And more, you know, just put it, you know, Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer. Like that would come on.
Hey, that sounds good, man. You should make that.
People are wondering why the movies are dying, why no one's going to the movie theaters. We need techno anthems that scream the name of the movie.
Yeah, just do that. That's an easy fix. Easy fix. But that was, we would always watch that or we would always listen to that when we played. Uh-huh. And we had our ritual. And man, we probably did that longer than we should probably admit. I feel like we were probably close to our teen years before we actually stopped doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to embarrass you just a little bit because the other thing we would do is we would fight over who got to be Bridget Wilson's boyfriend.
Yes. So
Bridget Wilson, who plays Sonya in Mortal Kombat. And she's also Veronica Vaughn in Billy Madison.
Yes. And
every time we played big guys or little guys, we'd be like, yeah, and just so you know, Bridget Wilson's my girlfriend. And then you'd be like,
she's my girlfriend.
Like, she's actually my girlfriend. You get her twin. And it'd be like, no, you get the twin.
I get the real one. You get the twin.
Which is like, Like, we're actually arguing over who gets Bridget Wilson and who gets the twin. And she's not there. Like, no. She's not in the, it's who gets to imagine that their girlfriend is Bridget Wilson versus which 9-year-old gets to imagine that Bridget Wilson is their girlfriend, and which 9-year-old has to pretend that Bridget Wilson's twin sister is.
Yeah, her identical twin. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was big in the 90s. We both had a big crush on her.
I mean, look. And that's pretty cool, because there could have been, she was also like a hardcore action.
She was Sonya Blade, man. She doesn't take, she was pretty. Yeah, she was great in that movie.
She breaks Kano's neck with her thighs.
She does.
Yeah.
She doesn't take no crap. She is. I do distinctly remember that all the time as well.
Yeah.
Fighting over Bridget Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were really cool, is the thing.
Yep. Awesome.
And
kids.
we were making movies in our heads from a very, very young age. I think that you're right that it took us a little, maybe too long, to stop doing that on a daily basis. But what we did pretty much immediately is we went from pretending to make movies to just making movies. So we each got cameras 1 year for Christmas, I think, and then we just started going. The way that we're going to keep playing the games that we play every day, but not be like the biggest dorks, the way that we're going to get to still play action figures together is if we're making movies. If we're filming it. So we would make stop motion animation videos with our action figures, or we would, you know, big guys or little guys. Sometimes we would just be in it. It would just be us. Mm-hmm. But we were doing that stuff.
Yeah, we were. We always, I think we had very grand ideas of what we wanted to do. And then, you know, you can only do so much when you're 9 years old.
I think we thought we were doing a much better job than we were. Right.
I think you're right. But we tried. I think we actually even came up with there were a few times we came up with some plots. You know, we got into like a horror when Scream came out. Somehow we both saw Scream or saw parts of it. And then we came up with our own slasher movie. Mm-hmm. And, I don't want to leave out Kevin Barton, because he was the one that really kind of, us three would just make movies all the time. And
Kevin Barton was kind of like the auteur of our little film production studio.
He was.
I think that he would be the one that would call us up and be like, "Hey guys, I've got a new movie that we're making. It's called Newt and whatever their name is, High School Reunion."
And it
two Viceroy characters from episode one, Phantom Menace.
yes.
But it's Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion, but with those two characters.
that was hilarious. Yeah. So we would always do it with him. And we came up with like a whole slasher script, which we never shot, but like, I don't know. Yeah. We had scenes in our head, and you know, that kind of carried us through, like you said, as long as we could. And that, I would love to see if Kevin still had those movies. I mean, maybe I wouldn't love to see them, but it would be great if he did.
I was at my parents' house of maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, and they had digitized a bunch of mini DV tapes that they had found, and they had, you know, Christmases and birthdays and and vacations and things like that. But then all of a sudden and my nieces and nephews were watching them. They wanted to see what all of us looked like when we were kids. And all of a sudden in the middle of one, up comes like a whole stream of videos that we made in junior high. And it was painful. It was because also we were like, we kind of got into like CKY and like, that's like when Jackass was like starting to be a thing. And so we were trying to emulate those guys, as were, I think, every group of teenagers with a video camera in the late 90s, early 2000s. Yes. And so it was us doing our best impression of that stuff. And it was like really not funny and really bad. And kind of stuff that like we should maybe be canceled for too.
yeah we did some stuff like, that it was not
like racist stuff and like
oh man, I don't remember that stuff, but I'm sure we did. That's the problem. I mean,
we did Master Dojo and Sato
is Japanese.
Japanese, and he played Master Dojo, but it was, I mean, Sato was being pretty heavy-handed with his Japanese accent.
Yes. Yeah. Was that one in there? Did you have Master Dojo?
I had a little bit of Master Dojo in there.
Oh, wow.
Had a little bit of Master Dojo in there. But here's the thing is I've seen some like teenage movies from filmmakers, you know, M. Night Shyamalan, like where they you can see movies that they made when they were growing up as kids. I've seen some of these films and they're never like great, but compared to what we made, they were better. So I would even say that even for kids, we were doing not great.
No, we weren't doing very great.
I think that our imaginations far exceeded our work ethic at that time. Like we weren't willing. We had the vision. We had ideas that were cool, but we weren't willing to like sit down and spend the time that it would take to edit. Like I remember at the time, my version of editing was just being like, we just got to like, as soon as I hit record, do the take. Cause I have no ability to go in here and trim time off the, so you would watch these videos that would be just like one take after another that would, you oftentimes you'd hear a person at the beginning going like, go, you know, and then it'd be like some 13-year-old kid being like, okay, you need to and like, and that's the whole movie. And it's like, boy, if you could have just gone into Adobe and just trim some of that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Or even just like iMovie or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I think close to my senior year of high school, or probably it was probably like sophomore or so, I discovered Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah.
And if we would have had that when we were younger, we could have done a lot of good. But
I know that when I first got my camera, my dad also got me like Adobe on like, you know, the disc. But I bet, and look, 36 years old and I am still this way. There is just a certain limit to how much technobabble and jargon my brain can absorb. So when I tried to learn Adobe as like a 13 or 14 year old, I just was like, this will never happen. And here we are. This many years later, 20, 23, 24 years later. And I still am like, no, it's gotta be easy. I got like, it's gotta be really, really streamlined and easy. Too many buttons, too many options. And my brain turns to mush.
It's a lot. It's not user-friendly.
Yeah.
Premiere is not user-friendly until you get to know it, then you can figure it out. But
well, and this is a good transition because this is now what you do.
Yes.
Professionally, this is you have been a professional editor for a long time now, and videographer. Let's just, how'd you get into that? Let's go through film school and the different jobs you've had as a filmmaker.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I always loved movies. And then, you know, I served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I came back and I still wanted to do it. So I worked at my family company, which is England Trucking. And I did safety videos. So that was back in 2009. So it's been 15 years since then. I went to school at the U for communication, new media communication. And I just kept working. And then, you know, I took a year off and then I decided, you know, I really got to give this. I really want to see if I could do something in film. So I applied to film schools. I got into Chapman University in Orange, California for film and television producing. So I went from 2014 to 2016. I went to Chapman University. It was awesome. I loved it. I met some awesome people, worked with some really great people. I learned a lot. Learned a lot about producing, which I really am grateful that I learned that, because producing is a lot. Nobody really knows what you do, but basically you are putting the movie together.
Yeah.
You're getting everybody together and making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to.
All of the pieces that are required to make a movie happen, that person is making sure that all of those things are there.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like, you know, if you want to compare it to sports, it's a lot like a general manager. GMs will, you know, get the coach. They'll find out who the coach is, or they'll try and, you know, recruit the players or draft the players or whatever. But they're not coaching the team. They don't own the team. Right. So it's kind of like, it's kind of very similar in that respect. So it was a really fun time. I loved Chapman. I got to make short films. The thing I loved about Chapman was they would make you make films, you know? So my first semester there, we were assigned a film, a short film, and we would start working on it and just kind of learn as we go. So it was a ton of fun. When I graduated, in 2016, I got a job with the University of Utah. and I worked for their football team. So I was a videographer there and I would edit videos. And that's, you know, after film school, I realized, you know, producing is great, but it's a lot. And I realized that I love editing and I feel like I love it. It's a hard thing to do. It does require a lot of patience. Like you've got to be really patient, but I love getting everything and putting it together and seeing what I can make from it. So I really realized after that, like, okay, editing is my passion. This is what I really want to do. And I'm not sad that I went to school for producing because all of those traits that I learned still come in handy. You know, it gives me an appreciation for what everybody else does. But I love to edit. So I was with them for 2.5 seasons. And then I went back to England Logistics, which is a sister company to England Trucking. And I did corporate stuff there and I edited. And it was really, really fun. I had a great time there. And then now I have my job where I work at BYU TV, which is funny because I'm a Utah fan, but I've loved my job so far. I've been there for 3 years and I edit promos and trailers. I get to sit in an edit bay all day and I get to watch movies and watch TV shows. And honestly, I love it. Like I love the editing process. Just like I said, I love taking something and, you know, seeing how it comes out. So a lot of times I'm working with existing media. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of movies that we show on the station. Everything is family friendly, so we'll kind of edit some stuff out. But I get to make promos for it, and I get to make trailers. I got to make a trailer for the movie Wonder, which was a lot of fun. It was our own. I modeled it after one that they had made, which was already a great trailer, but it was fun. I have made trailers that are all my own. I made one for a movie or a show called A Kind of Spark. Which I'm really proud of. It was a good show and I loved the trailer that I made. So it's a lot of fun. I love editing. I love sitting in a dark room and watching movies and making something else out of it. So luckily I have that patience, but it is a lot. Like you said, like it's hard to understand the software if you don't know what it does or like how it all works. So it takes a lot of time to kind of get into that. So
I think it makes sense that you kind of went the direction that you went and I went the direction that I went. Yeah. Because I just think that you always had a little more patience or tolerance for the technical side of things. Whenever right. Whenever we were shooting with your camera, it felt like you were willing to do more takes to get it right or to make sure we got, you know, versus like if I was right. shooting something, that's what, like the things that I have is just like me going like, ah, it's fine. Next part, you know, and I think I was more concerned with making sure I was in front of the camera doing something funny anyway, you know? And so it's like, there's always been a little bit more of me being in front of,
right.
But I don't know, like as I get older, I really like the process of
yeah
putting something together. There's nothing I love more than doing these music videos where like, I love sitting down and working out a shot list when we've done it together. I love being like, okay, here's where I think we can shoot this, coming yeah. up with a shot list, coming up with a concept that works on a budget and then executing it. It's so fun. I really like, you know, I get like high about it, you know, just yeah. being like in the space of doing it. It's like an adrenaline rush.
It is. Yeah. And I love running and gunning with you. Right. Yeah. Like it's cause sometimes we only have, you know, we have a night, so we have like 4 hours and we want to make something all in one night. So we do it, you know, and it's something really fun about that.
Yeah.
It is kind of an adrenaline rush.
You're moving work fast. To get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're always moving fast on a film set, but like we move fast.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's worked out well so far. I'm really proud of the ones that we've made together.
Me too. I feel
like, you know, the we started out with your Boss TV music video.
Mm-hmm.
What was the song name? I'm so sorry, I'm forgetting it.
Before I Let You Go.
Before I Let You Go. That was the yeah. first thing. You know, it's funny because we've made things together. Mm-hmm. When we were kids, like we talked about, but that was the actual first thing that we made as professionals, who kind of do this for a living.
Yeah.
And, it was a ton of fun. And yeah. the ones that we've made after that, they've been great too. It's been so much fun to just kind of work in that style and just hurry and get everything that we need and then go back and edit it. And yeah, you and I edit it together, and it's been a ton of fun.
I think we've made like 4 or 5 now of those. Uh-huh. But those are always really, really fun. And it is a thing where it's like, because we're moving so fast and because we have such a small budget, sometimes you get to the edit portion and you go, ah, geez, I wish we could have gotten one more look at that. Or oh, boy, there was a thing there where like my shirt's tucked in and then it's untucked because we were moving so fast that we had nobody on we don't have a script supervisor or anything like that that's looking at continuity. And we're all, you and me, are wearing 5 or 6 hats each and doing the job of you know, several different people.
But that's kind of what makes it good, too.
Yeah.
Because this is fun. This is the thing about movies and TV and everything. I mean, you have a certain amount of time to make everything, but there's a saying in Hollywood that, you know, a movie's never finished. It's just abandoned. Yeah. And I love that saying because, you know, at a certain point, it's just like, you know what? It's not the biggest deal. Like once you get something made, once we have made these music videos, like there are definitely things we could have done differently, but now that it's done, I'm happy that it's done. And you get those little things that we can talk about, but most people won't notice, you know.
People who are watching it aren't thinking, oh, I wonder if they missed a chance to do that take one more time.
Exactly.
They're thinking that's the take we wanted to go with, and there must have been a reason why. Or they're not even they're just taking in the experience of watching it as a complete thing. They're not watching every single little teeny detail. You're so right about that. It's not finished. It's abandoned because it does need to just, there's a little gnat flying around in my studio. Every time I do this, there just comes to a point where I have to just say, that's it. That's it. That's, we're done. And that just happened this. So I just did a music video that's coming out soon. That is a one-er. It's a 4.5-minute long one-er.
Yeah. And, which I love, by the way.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. Yeah. But it took longer to get to a final, to a picture lock final cut than I thought it would, because it was just one take. But there was a few things. Like we had 2 takes that we really liked, and that's complicated when you're doing a one-er, because we were like, crap, we really like both of these takes,
right?
And we can only do one of them because it takes place in, and there are things on one take that worked better than the other. And then, you know, and so you'd go, oh, but on this take, this moment works better, but on this take, this moment. And so we had to sort of weigh like which moments are more important, and also had to go, what does our gut say? What is the vibe? Because most people watching this aren't going to notice all of the little teeny tiny things that I notice when I watch it. Right. I notice little teeny tiny hiccups here and there, but most people who are watching it aren't going to see that. And then we had to settle on a color grading for the entire thing. And since it's all one take, that was a little complicated. Then we had to do some like sound foley that we had to get right, the mixing on that. And then we had things like credits, just like how the graphics were going to appear on the screen for the credits. And that was a whole thing. And we finally got to a take that I was like, that feels done. That feels good. And the lead singer of the band was like, proposed this like totally new idea. He was like, what about this? And it was like, not a bad idea at all. It was like a totally cool idea. And I just was like, and I had been saying yes to all of his ideas because it's his band, you know, it's his song. But I just was like, you know what? I think we're done. And I think we just like, at some point you just got it. Cause we could just keep playing. We could just keep tinkering and tinkering. And maybe there's an even cooler, maybe there's the most perfect version of it out there. I don't know if at a certain point you just got to go, that's enough. I think we could have released the rough take that I sent to you, that it's like, we could have totally released that and it would have been just fine, just like that. And we added color and sound and all these little doodads and stuff. And it looks great. And I feel really good about it. There's little teeny tiny things that bother me, but I'm like, at a certain point you just have to go, that's good. I'm going to let that go. And abandon it and let it be the property of everyone who's going to watch it.
Yeah. Let it be what it is. So
you got this job as an editor. I have started making videos together, and that brings us here. Basically you messaged me probably a month and a half ago, something like that, and said, hey, would you want to do a podcast about movies where we just break down films? And I responded like immediately. I was like, yep,
Yeah, I was like waiting for, I was expecting to wait for a while for a response, but you came back like right immediately. It was great. I was like, All right, let's do it.
I know it's a good sign if somebody asks me if I want to do something and my initial gut response is just,
Yeah.
Like if, so yeah. if, and that's like, I think it's like, if somebody asks me to do something and my first thought is like, oh geez, I don't know. I don't know if I have time for that. Like that means I can maybe sit and think about it, but also it's, if that initial thrust isn't there, but this one, it's like, for whatever reason, there was nothing about the concept. We didn't even know what we necessarily wanted to do. I just was like, I know I can talk to Kramer about movies. So that's what we've been doing. And we've done 5 episodes so far. And I think so far the theme is that it's kind of a mixture of movies that made us, movies that we kind of came up on, and a mixture of stuff that's in the theater right now and sort of in between too. So it's like, hey, we did Twisters, but we also did Twister. So it's sort of a twofer because Twister was a movie that we had on VHS and that we watched a lot at sleepovers. And, and we knew that movie and we knew those lines and we could quote those lines. And so then, you know, Twisters happened and it's like, oh, we can't just do Twisters. We got to do Twister too, you know?
Yeah. 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 It's, and that's, I imagine going forward, because we love all the movies that we grew up with, we'll do episodes on those, but I still love movies, you know, and you love movies. Like we both love movies. So we want to have those same reactions to new movies. So it'll be, like you said, a mixture of both, and breaking them down and why do we love them? You know, why are they good? Why aren't they good? I mean, I really love the structure of movies and how they work out. But there's also something, sometimes a movie really structurally is not very good, but I still love it. So like, why do I love that? And we just, I figure as we go on, we're just going to break down, you know, sometimes it's not going to be a technical reason. Sometimes it might be because of nostalgia reasons or whatever, but we'll kind of break all that down.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We just did an episode on Prometheus that'll be coming out soon.
Yes.
And I saw someone say this. For some reason, my algorithm has been feeding me a lot of alien movie discourse, like on threads and stuff. Like I'm getting a lot of like fan theories and discourse about the alien movies, and it's probably because I'm interacting with it. Whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, I want to. Oh, like someone's like, I have this crazy theory about alien Romulus, and I'm like, I want to know what this person has to say. I like nerding out on stuff like that, and also I just watched all of the alien movies. I'd never actually like sat down and watched all of the movies in that franchise in like a 2-week period before. And I watched all of them, including Romulus, but we were doing an episode on Prometheus. And I saw someone say this, they were like, yeah, Prometheus is a very divisive film and people, so many people have opinions about it. And this person was like, and I don't even disagree with those opinions. I think everyone's criticisms are valid, but also every person I hear talk about how much they hate that movie will say that it's a movie that they've seen 4 or 5 times. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. Like there's something about it that's like, I don't watch it and go, I never want to watch this movie ever again. I am drawn back to Prometheus. Like it's
true.
It is. It's a fascinating film to watch because it's like you're wondering, like, what didn't work here? Because there's so much that is, there's so much curb appeal. Like it looks great. It's really well crafted. It's well designed. The production design is incredible. The cinematography is incredible. It's got this really like amazing score. Michael Fassbender's great. So you're like, how did they not bring this together? And you watch it and go like, this should work. And it rather than being the kind of movie that you go, geez, I never want to watch that ever again, you kind of are still intrigued enough by it to go back to it.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I'd never really thought about it that way either. But yeah, I've seen Prometheus probably 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is because it's so close to being good. But it's also, there's so many movies that I think the worst movie that you can make is one that you watch and go, oh yeah, okay, that was good, and then never think about it again.
I think the worse than that is, so okay, all right, so I said I just watched all the alien movies, and I did, and then I decided, you know what, I'm gonna watch the AVPs. I know that they're not canon, but they're there, they're movies with xenomorphs in them, and I've watched all the other ones, so whatever. And so I went and I go watch Alien versus Predator from 2004. It's bad. It's not a good movie, but
yes.
So, like, The Alien franchise and the Predator franchise are very different stylistically. Alien is a franchise tends to take itself pretty seriously. All of those movies at least attempt to take the subject matter pretty seriously. They try to get into philosophical questions and
And horror based.
Yeah, horror.
Getting into horror has a lot of undertones that you can use that are can be taken very seriously.
Right. And then there's Predator, which from the jump is it's an action. It's an 80s action franchise. It's muscle guys in the jungle fighting a hunter alien. And that's what it is kind of from like Predator was always a little more campy than Alien was as a franchise. It was always more good, clean fun or good, gory fun, you know, of buff guys who are doing really strong bicep. Yeah. Handshakes. Yeah. And
for no reason.
Yeah, it's great. And that's what Predator always was. And when the two meet, it takes on the persona of more of a Predator movie.
It does. Like,
it is, it's more a Predator movie than it is an Alien movie stylistically. But knowing that, I gotta say, I had a fun time with Paul W.S. Anderson's movie.
Okay.
It's not a good movie at all. Don't get me wrong. But I was like, for what this needs to be, it's him just going, hey, all I really want to deliver here is some fun scenes where a predator fights a xenomorph. And the movie's got several pretty well executed and like well choreographed and well shot sequences where a predator and an alien just sort of like
go at it,
like throw each other through walls. And like, you know, there's one scene in particular that I loved where there's this predator who's like hunting and he's like looking around and behind him, the xenomorph is like creeping up on him. Like it's about to grab him. And then its tail is coming up. Like it's going to, its tail's like coming up on the side of his head. And then the predator looks to his side and there's a face hugger jumping at him and he throws a blade that just slices the face hugger in half. And then he takes out his blade out of his hand and just goes like this. And he just cuts the head of the xenomorph right in half that's behind him. Like the xenomorph's like coming up close and it just kind of stalls. And then the front half of its head just slides off.
I remember
that. It's awesome.
That. Yeah.
it's awesome. That. And it's like totally stupid movie.
Yes.
My point in this very long story is I watched this dumb movie that's definitely the dumbest movie I've seen so far with a xenomorph in it. And then I watch Alien versus Predator Requiem, and it's the only movie in the entire franchise, if you can even count these movies as being in the franchise, it's the only movie that I watched of all these movies that was so bad I couldn't finish it. Actually, I got about an hour into it and I went, I don't think I need to keep watching this. I don't think I'll ever finish it because it was that bad.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a worse kind of movie that you can make. And it's the kind of movie that's so bad that you're like, not only will I never watch this again, I don't even care if I finish it.
That's real bad. But you want movies to make an impact, whether good or bad. And, you know, going back to Prometheus, it's one that gets people thinking, and it's good to analyze because it is like, why is this not working? But anyway, that's what I love. That's what I love doing is analyzing these movies. Why do they work? Why do they not work? What is it that we love about them?
It gets in there, you know, I actually think that most movies are the kind of movies that just sort of come and go and don't make a splash and don't really, you know, so during our show, we have, a system for how we score movies. We have these different scales. So one of them is technical score. It's, you know, how the movie did technically with just the craft of the film, writing, special effects, score, acting. The other is the ending. How well does the movie stick the ending? The other is rewatchability. One is cultural relevance, the cultural impact of a movie. And I actually think that most films that are made kind of don't stick in the cultural consciousness.
Yeah.
They come and go and even if they're decent, they don't really stick around. I think the movies that we talk about for years to come, whether we liked them or didn't like them, are movies that managed to do something that stuck, you know?
Yeah.
you see people talking about Prometheus. You see people talking about Alien Covenant. You see people talking about Alien Resurrection. You don't really see people talking about either of the AVP movies, but you definitely, the only thing they say about every Alien versus Predator Requiem is, wow, that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's like, yeah. You know, it's like, that's it. That's the only thing to be said about that movie is it's bad.
But
Yes.
And then the last one that you forgot, the personal score, just kind of our personal subjective score, which could be, you know, you can have really high scores on all those, but if you hate the movie, you can have a really low personal score.
I don't think that's happened quite yet with us, but
no, it hasn't. Not yet. Yeah. It probably will, maybe, but actually I could think of a few movies that if we did it, that's what it probably would be, at least for me.
I think that Prometheus a little bit was that way for us, because it was like you can't say that its technical score should be super low. It's technically well put together. The only thing that it really loses points on is the screenplay. The screenplay just feels like it doesn't deliver in the ways that you want it to. But all the actors are doing their best. The effects department is killing it. The cinematography is amazing. Production design's amazing. The score is really good. It's just the script that's
But I think the thing that I really love about how we've scaled these movies, or how we're scoring these movies, because like if you just do like one, you know, 1 to 10 or 4 stars or 5 stars or however many, it doesn't really give you the whole picture. And our scale is not perfect, but I do like that we kind of have that more broader range that you can tell, like, well, technically it's all great, but man, this movie sucked, or like I hate it for this reason or whatever, or it may be low on the technical scores and all the other thing, but I love it, you know, because of when I was a kid I would watch it all the time. But
I think I would give Alien versus Predator, Paul W.S. Anderson's movie from 2004, a lower technical score than I would my subjective score. I think my technical score would be like 5, and then my subjective score would be like 6.5. Like, I had a good time.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. And sometimes that's the thing, is all movies are very subjective. They're not very, it's art. Art is all subjective. You know, there's not,
right.
You can objectively try to score things. And there are reasons and things that you can do to kind of prove your point. But when it comes down to it, you know, movies, like any art, are subjective, and you may love it or you may hate it, even if everybody loves it or hates it or vice versa or whatever. So, but I think our scale kind of gives us a more whole picture of how you feel about a movie, instead of just the 4 stars. I hate 4 stars, by the way. That's just too little.
It's not enough. Even 5 stars doesn't feel like on Letterboxd they have 5 stars, and I'm like, it just doesn't feel like like enough space for me to, you know, if I really like something and I feel like it's like a solid 8 out of 10, I guess it's a 4, but then a four feels like 90%.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite, but then 3.5 feels really low. It feels like I'm, you know, it's just like,
exactly. I
know technically 4 and 8 should be the same, but 4 feels like I'm giving it 1 fewer than the most possible.
Exactly.
So,
that's why we did that. So enough. Hopefully that kind of comes across. We'll see.
I think so. So we're going to be, if you want to join us on this journey, it's the Wonner podcast. It's the Wonner with Austin and Kramer. We're going to drop our first episode tomorrow. I think we're doing Deadpool and Wolverine to start out, a movie that has been absolutely dominating the domestic and international box office.
Yes.
So that'll be here on this YouTube channel. We'll get it up on places, the audio platforms and all of that stuff too. And and join us if you want to hang out with us. We're going to be doing current films, and we're going to be doing movies that are a little bit older too, movies that we grew up with and movies that kind of shaped us, and retrospectives and things like that.
Yeah. Tell us your stories, what you love about the movies, or if you ever want to send us your scale, You can scale a movie along with us. We'd love to interact with anybody, because we love talking about movies. It's an easy thing to talk to most people about. Most people have an interaction that they can talk about with movies. So come talk to us. We want to know what you think.
It is a common cultural touch point for sure, where people can all come together and have opinions and thoughts. But yeah, hopefully you'll find something in there that you enjoy. If you like movie commentary or film commentary, you'll want to come along with us. The first episode of The Oneer will drop tomorrow, and then we'll start having weekly episodes of that. First, it'll be here on this YouTube channel, and then it'll get its own spot. And we'll see. We're just going to do it, you know? Yeah. If you've got film recommendations, let us know. If you've got things that are coming up that you're like, oh, I really want, hope you guys see this, or movie that, an old movie that could tie in with something that's coming out, let us know.
Yeah, give us your suggestions.
Yeah. Kramer,
yes.
Thanks for joining me on People Pleaser.
Hey, I'm glad. It's great to be on the show. I've seen it for, you know, I even helped with it at one point, you know.
You did.
So I'm happy to be on it. This is great.
Yeah. Is this your first time being a guest on this show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I know. That's right. Okay. You probably, I'm not that interesting. I'm pretty boring. So, but that's I like talking about movies. So
that's why I started a podcast with you, is because you're good and boring. And that's
boring, there's boring white guy. So
that's what people love. well, cool. Awesome. This was great. And thanks everybody. And, we'll see you. We'll see you on The Oneer, and we'll see you on the next episode of People Pleaser, whenever that is. I don't know. But okay. Goodbye, then. Bye bye. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
And being self-righteous should mean I got a great self-esteem.
Okay, so just a reminder, that is The Oneer Podcast. It's available now on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on most places where podcasts are available. The title that you should look up is The Oneer with Austin and Kramer. The Oneer with Austin and Kramer. And you can also subscribe to us right now we're on my YouTube channel, which you should be subscribed to if you're not already, Austin Archer. But you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok as well, The Oneer Podcast, at The Oneer Podcast, Theoneer Podcast. Go do that and give us some love and help us get this show off the ground. I'm excited about it. And I'm excited to go to Italy. Here we go. Arrivederci, you know, all that stuff. Ciao. And here's hoping I get to see some good movies and eat some good food and take in some good sights, and it's all good. It's all good. All right. Okay. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. This is just a shout out to the Patreon patrons, just saying, hey, we're over there still. If you would like to support this show and support the other things I'm doing, like The Oneer Podcast, hit us up over at Patreon, please. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Shout out to all of the patrons. I love you so much. Thank you. And that's all. We'll talk to you next time. Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, this has to work. Eventually.